Welcome to the Pro Photographer Interview Series, episode number 29. This is Shamir Young with you from Zenjoyable.com. Today we chat with Frederick Van Johnson, photographer, marketer, and speaker. He's been shooting professionally since 1989. The art of marketing is near and dear to his heart, and he's helped build successful marketing campaigns for Fortune 100 companies like Adobe, Apple, Yahoo, and AOL. In this episode, I chat with Frederick about action being the best cure for those sleepless nights we spend worrying about our photography businesses, and how important it is to have your own email list. We also touch on the harm that competing on price can do to your business. Now, before we get to the interview, very quickly, I want to let you know about our Photography Business Essential Bundle. It's 4 weeks of freebies delivered every 7 days to your email inbox, and this is available on our website, Zenjoyable.com. The first thing you'll get is the interactive PDF e-guide titled 12 Common Business Tips and Mistakes Photographers Wish They'd Known Before Going Pro. Now, the information in this ebook was gathered from my own mistakes, of course, but also just in the conversations that I've had with different photographers, including the photographers from our interview series. So, in this PDF e-guide, you're going to get a wealth of information compiled from many different photographers. Now, after this e-guide, every 7 days, for 4 weeks, you'll get a new freebie that'll help propel your photography business forward. Head on over to Zenjoyable.com and you'll see that offer on the homepage and also in the sidebars. And like I said, it's totally free. Also, wherever you're listening to the show, be it iTunes, Stitcher Radio, wherever, I ask that you leave us a review. I want to hear what you think. If you think that we're delivering true value to you, then please leave us a 5-star review. Based on your feedback, I will be continually improving the show. All right, let's get to the good stuff. Hey, everybody. I'm hanging with Frederick Van Johnson, marketer, photographer, and broadcaster, among other things. Fred, you're a busy guy, so just thank you so much for hanging out with us.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me on. It's an honor.
And is it okay if I call you Fred? I didn't even ask you that. Is that all right?
You know, that's a funny story. So in high school, I went by Fred. But then when I passed 30, I switched it to Frederick because it sounds more expensive.
So. Oh, I like that.
I mean, would you go to a restaurant named Fred or would you like to go to Frederick's? Come on.
Frederick definitely sounds more distinguished.
Yes, Frederick. Sure. Frederick serves filet mignon. Fred serves burgers.
So we'll stick to Frederick for the interview.
Yes,
got it. You. Okay, good. I'm glad I asked. Awesome. Well, you know, first of all, I really just want our listening audience to learn more about you, because just to say that you're a photographer would be a serious understatement. So first of all, just tell us who you are, where you come from, and what you do.
Yeah. I could talk for the whole time on just, well, I'm a photographer at my core. So, you know, most things that I do are to branch from a seed of photography. And I enjoy that because photography is kind of in my blood. It's the stuff that I love. It allows me to express both the creative side of my mind, you know, the psychology piece when you're working with models and stuff, as well as the, you know, the geek piece, like lusting after the latest Apple iMac that gets released. So all that stuff comes together and photography gives me an excuse to, you know, to kind of massage that piece of me. So that's me at the core. Now, the other piece of me, like I mentioned, psychology, that kind of speaks to the marketing piece. So I love marketing and I love the idea of, you know, at the very basis of marketing is the idea of convincing somebody to do something, you know, and whether it's, you know, it could be nefarious, you know, it could be trying to convince somebody to buy something they don't really need, or it could be convincing somebody to get something that's truly going to help them. I tend to lean into that latter camp there. So I love that piece of it and just that whole psychology of internet marketing and email marketing and changing words to make people open an email versus, you know, all that little stuff gets me excited. So that's kind of who I am today. You know, it's a photographer / marketer. And then I like education as well. So I like, at some point in my life, I hit this point where I knew a lot of stuff. So I felt like, okay, maybe I can start teaching other people some of the things that I know. So that's where the education piece comes in. And it turns out that I love teaching people and relating to people complex concepts and kind of making them more approachable and more digestible. So that's me today. The background is, you know, I was in the military for, you know, the better part of a decade, and as a combat photojournalist. So that's where the photography got into me. Wow. And then I got out and went to, you know, came to Silicon Valley and joined, you know, Apple and Adobe and Yahoo and, you know, companies like that, and kind of cut my teeth on the marketing side of things as well. And that's kind of formed the Frederick Van Johnson of today.
I like it. So you're like a quadruple threat then, really. You've got the discipline from the military, and then you have the photography experience with the marketing and the education piece.
Yeah.
Excellent. Yeah. Well, you know, for this interview, I really want to touch more on the business and marketing aspect of photography. But we are curious, what area of photography would you specifically call your expertise?
Yeah, well, it's funny. So when I was in the military, there's no such thing as specialization. You have to be kind of a jack of all trades and master of all of them, right? Because you can be called on at any time to do any kind of photography, and you must create excellent work. You know, that's the job. Then when I got out, so, you know, it was good just to learn that sort of bedrock of photography, different disciplines like sports and, you know, macro, photojournalism, portraiture, news, all that stuff. So you learn all that stuff. But when I got out, I gravitated towards people. You know, I like interacting with people and drawing emotions out of them and creating a photograph of someone that they will cherish, you know, for years to come. I don't know if that makes me a portrait photographer or a portrait artist, because I tend to lean more towards like fashion-y type stuff. So I don't know if you can pigeonhole it. You know, it's I'm a people photographer, I guess, you know, if you have to put a corral around it.
Excellent. And, you know, back to the marketing piece and even interacting with people, just the different things you're mentioning. I'm sitting here scribbling notes. And these things are, from my personal experience, things I did not learn until after college. As far as, I would say, taking photos is only a small part of running a photography business. There's so much more that goes into it. You know, from the business aspect, there's the marketing, there's getting your name out there. But even during the shoot, interacting with people. It took me months to realize that when I'm at ease, my client is at ease as well. And, you know, it took me even more time to realize that you're telling a story, that you're conveying emotion. There's so much that goes into it.
Yeah. Yeah. And photography is really cool in that respect, because when you, like you said, when you get to a set, or even if it's a wedding you're shooting, or you're shooting a model or whatever, you as the photographer for that span of time that you're with that person or those people, you're in control. You are the person in control. You're the doctor. You're the lawyer. You know, you are the person that is in control of the entire situation, and they're looking to you for guidance. That takes a special kind of person to be able to lead, present that aura of leadership and I got it together, and, you know, the bedside manner of a doctor, while also being technically competent to create that image and create excellence. Because if you fall down on any one of those things, so if you go there, you go to a set and you are not confident, that's going to telegraph to everyone, and they're not going to want to get behind what you're doing. You Absolutely. Know, even on a subconscious level, you know, even with a wedding, if you're fumbling and you're like, oh, wait, you know, let me switch this. Okay, guys, I think I got it now. You ready for the shot? If you're that person, then you know your photography will suffer. But, you know, even if you're a good photographer and you're fumbling on the front end, it's going to suffer. And on the other side, if you are a mediocre photographer, but you have the gift of gab and you can, you know, talk the talk without walking the walk, it's still not going to work, because at some point you have to show them the work and it's not going to match up to the talk, and it's a fail. So you have to be equally competent on both sides.
Absolutely. And like you said, people can see right through you in a second, really. Mm-hmm. And so what would you say would be some of the more common obstacles as far as amateur photographers wanting to cross that line and make money off of their talent?
Education, that's the first thing. And it's easier than ever before to dive in and learn photography. I remember when I first started learning photography, it was, you know, going to the library and getting books and trying to figure this stuff out, trying to figure out what does it mean to do a double exposure? How do I do that? What's actually happening? You know, and now you can watch a YouTube video just like that and get that information in your head, then go out and try it with your digital camera and immediately see the results of what you tried, whether it's a success or a failure. And then repeat it until you get it right. So education, I think from a starting photographer standpoint, just figuring out what it is you like you mentioned for me, what genre of photography do I gravitate towards? So look at that online, go find inspirational photographs out there that touch you, whether it's on 500px or on Flickr or wherever, you know, or even Shutterstock or some site like that. Go in there, explore and find sites or find images that you find interesting, then try to recreate them. You're not going to copy them. Try to recreate them and figure out what that artist was doing when they put it together. This could be a composite. You're like, okay, how did they make that tree grow out of that person's head? Mm-hmm. Okay, I want to try that, you know. So try it and fail, learn more, and then pretty soon you'll be a success at it. But, you know, I think one of the traps that people get stuck in is the whole gear piece of it. It's like, okay, I gotta have what Joe McNally's shooting with in order to be a good photographer, when Joe McNally is sponsored by blah, 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 and he gets gear, you know, probably cheaper than you would. And, you know, so, and just by virtue of the fact that he has a certain piece of gear, or some famous photographer has a certain piece of gear, doesn't mean that makes them a good photographer. You can do amazing images with a mobile phone, you know, or with an entry level DSLR. It's the technique behind it and the fundamentals of photography that people have to grasp in order to get that superpower of being a great photographer.
Gear acquisition syndrome.
Gas.
Oh, yes. Yes, yes. You know, I had somebody write into Zenjoyable telling me a story about how they were at an event and there were several photographers there. And this other photographer had much more impressive gear, we'll say. And so people walking by, they were more impressed with this other photographer. Turns out they had no idea how to use it. And so they had to go seek the help of other photographers who had lesser gear and trying to figure out, help me use this wonderful piece of Canon equipment that I've spent thousands on and I have no idea. It's so easy to fall into that trap.
Yeah. Yeah. Shamira, I go on these workshops or lead workshops where, you know, usually, and it never fails, there's usually, you know, a nice group of people, and all of them are always very nice and excited about photography, but there's always one, maybe two people, generally one person, that shows up with, like, they're going to battle, you know? Got every camera, every lens. I mean, they're ready for anything. Aliens could land in a invisible spaceship and they'd be able to capture it. Yeah. So there's those people. And then on the other end, there's people that show up with just a little mirrorless camera or a point and shoot or something. Mm-hmm. And they come out with amazing photos mm-hmm. with just the little camera. Whereas the person with all the gear is fumbling like, oh, I want to take a picture of that fire hydrant. Which lens should I use? You know, they get the analysis paralysis thing going on, whereas the other people are like, clack, got it. You know, on to the next thing.
Right. Right. Exactly. Oh, yeah. So, and you know, another thing, so I can see education being, I guess, difficult for some people as far as figuring out what kind of photographer you want to be, actually learning about it via YouTube. It's so easy to get distracted by the different gear that you can have, as you mentioned. But even as far as getting your foot in the door with new clients and new assignments, do you have any advice on what are some of the more effective techniques for that?
For client acquisition and getting noticed? Yeah, well, it's, you know, remember from school, right? It's an order of operations, right?
So
you have to do one thing before you can do the next thing. And the first thing that beginning photographers need to do is kind of figure out who they are first. You know, it's like anything. It's like life advice. You have to figure out who you are in order to go after, or figure out who you are, first of all, like what car you're driving, and then figure out where you want to go. So, you know, you have to figure the who you are piece of it is, and I consult with people marketing wise online about this. Even professional photographers haven't answered this question. Like, who's your audience? If you're a wedding photographer and you're blogging, are you speaking to other brides or are you blogging and speaking to other photographers because you want them to see how awesome you are, you know? Mm-hmm. So, you know, you have to figure out who you are, what your genre is, and then move from there. And then you know, as far as answering your question about how to acquire clients, once you have that foundation of who you are, then your verbiage starts changing in your communication outwardly on social media, Twitter, Facebook, LO, all these different networks. When you kind of figure out who you are and who the avatar of the person that you're trying to communicate is, mm-hmm. then it forms kind of the vernacular or the sentence structure of what you're saying. For example, put a fine point on it. For example, if you are a wedding photographer and you're speaking to brides, you're writing a blog post, for example, you're going to say, instead of speaking to photographers and saying, hey, look at this awesome shot. I did it with this 85-1-2. Look at the bokeh. It's amazing. I can't believe that I was able to do this. Then I brought in the Lightroom and I pumped up the saturation and added a splash of clarity. And voila, look at this bride. You know, instead of doing that, if you're speaking to brides, you would speak in more ethereal terms, right? He's like, okay, here's a wonderful photo of Jane Doe. She was so excited on her wedding day. And I'm glad as her photographer, I could be there to create this amazing image for her with very little stress, blah, 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 blah. So you're speaking to the things that press her pressure points, you know, versus the photographer's stress pressure points. And to get clients, you know, in the end, to turn all that interaction into clients in today's world, a lot of this stuff spins off from just having an audience, you know, having a large audience. Mm-hmm. And whether it's an audience of peers, it's an audience of photographers, etc. You want to start building that up on social media and email, which we can talk about later, and email so that you have a group of people that are interested in what you're doing that you can then harvest later. And there's some techniques for doing that as well.
And you know, with so many photographers out there, how do we get ourselves to stand out from the competition? I mean, there are a zillion wedding photographers out there, a zillion portrait photographers out there. How do we stand out?
Yeah, and you know, Sunny, it's easier than you think, because most of the cool thing is, the dirty little secret is, most of those people out there think it's harder than you think, so they don't do it. So, you know, it's like dating, right? You're like, you know what? I'm not going to go talk to that girl or guy over there because they're probably going to say no anyway. When the reality is that person's probably waiting on someone to come talk to them.
Right? So true. So true.
Right? Right. Mm-hmm, so, mm-hmm. You know, you get stuck and, you know, they have a bad time and you stand there with your drink holding up the wall. So, you know, in photography, it's the same thing, you know, to part of getting exposure to large audiences, one of the techniques is to align yourself with people that already have large audiences and make friends with them and start posting on their sites and, you know, showing up as guests like me on your podcast and mm-hmm. things like that. That starts getting your name around. And the side effect of that is, if, like on my show, when a photographer comes on my show that is relatively unknown, they instantly get a bump in credibility because the show has been around so long and they're now associated with the show mm-hmm. and with the other photographers that have been on that show. So now, you know, their social proof, if you will, grows a little bit because they were on that show. And now they can say, reach out. The whole thing is about relationships. So now they can reach out to someone else that's been on the show and say, hey, I was on TWIP too. You know, was wondering, you know, I just checked out your blog. I was wondering if I could guest post on your blog. I'm doing A, B, and C. It'd be great if I could do that. And by the way, I noticed that you're in the Chicagoland area too. If you ever want to get together and do a shoot together, or if you need a second shooter, I'm here. Boom. So start building those relationships. And then over time, they start bearing fruit. And before you know it, people are asking you to second shoot. So, mm-hmm. you know, that's how it goes.
So what you're saying then is that we need to just get out there and do it, basically.
You got to do it. You can't be the person that just sits around. That's the difference between successful people. Well, one of the main differences between successful people and unsuccessful people. Unsuccessful people, I think, generally, they suffer from lack of action, you know, mm-hmm. or analysis paralysis. They'll just sit there and dream about the things that they could do and the houses they want to buy and all this stuff. But then they never do it. You know, they never take any steps towards that goal. Whereas the successful people, you don't have to instantly become successful, but every day taking a little baby step or an inch or a centimeter in the direction that leads to what you want to do is amazingly therapeutic. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, going to bed at night saying, you know what, I did nothing today to advance my goals. It's depressing. It feels like you're backsliding, you know. But if you go to bed and you're saying, you know what, today I signed up for this email list provider because I heard I'm supposed to have an email list and I got that going. And I also researched blogs and I think I have a decision on the platform I'm going to use for my blog. And, you know, those little baby steps make you feel like that you're moving forward and you are moving forward. And then other people see you making those steps and the universe sort of conspires to help you move forward, because now, you know, the person that didn't do anything has no opportunity. They're not in the light. You took a step forward and now you're in the light a little bit. So opportunities present themselves. And you're like, oh, I hear you're looking at Squarespace or WordPress for your blog. Well, I recommend this, this, and this because that's what I'm using, you know. Whereas if you hadn't even tried, you wouldn't even have had that information. Right. So it's all about effort and trying and just moving forward a little bit at a time.
And you know, you really hit the nail on the head as far as it being therapeutic, action being therapeutic, because I know for myself, I've spent many sleepless nights laying there, you know, trying to figure out what to do, especially years ago. And I only got that peace in my mind. It's like the voices finally settled down when I'm actually in action, doing something to further my business.
Yeah.
And you think it almost sounds common sense, you know, it's like take action, but so many people don't. And I can think what's interesting, I know some extremely talented people who don't take action.
Yeah.
And it's like you see some amazing stuff that these people that I have seen them do personally, but they won't put it out there online. And it's so frustrating because you can dream and wish all you want, but it won't happen until you take action.
Yeah. And there's two things conspiring, I think. You know, one of them is, you know, thinking that you have to eat the entire elephant in one sitting, right? So, you know, so to use a garage analogy, like my garage, I got to clean out my garage. And, you know, if I open the garage door and I stand in front of it with my arms crossed and look at the amount of stuff that I have to do, it's overwhelming. I'm going to shut the garage and, you know, go away, you know?
Oh, yeah.
But if I trick myself, you know, like, today, you know, I'm just going to clean up that table right there. You know, today, just that table, I'm going to go get that cleaned off and throw away the stuff that I haven't touched in a year. And, you know, if I do that, I'll feel like I made some progress on my garage. So the trick yourself piece comes in. Once I clean that one table off, my own personality would dictate that I can't stop, you know? So like, you know what? I just did this. I still got it. That only took me 15 minutes. Let me just clean out this whole corner over here. Okay. I got the corner done. You know, maybe I'll stop today, or maybe, you know, let me just do this whole wall now, you know?
Right.
And you keep going. And that translates to work too. Cause you're like, with my blog, This Week in Photo, we just launched it. And I remember it was about a year ago when we first started the redesign. It was, we have to move this. It's a monumental effort. So we have to move the old site over. There's already traffic going there. We don't want to interrupt that. Plus it's serving up a podcast. It's the garage, you know, I just want to close the garage door. But instead what I did was, I said, you know what, what's the lowest common denominator here? Okay, it's the hosting provider for the site. I need to find a new hosting provider. Let me just do that. Tonight, I'm going to do that. So I did that. I found my hosting provider. And once I did that, I was like, you know what, I got a hosting provider. Let me just install WordPress on there real quick.
Right.
And then I do that. Then I did that. I'm like, okay, all right, I already have the theme that I want to use. Let me just install the theme and see how that looks. You know, then it goes on and on and on. And pretty soon the whole garage is clean and I'm just dusting things.
Absolutely. You eat that elephant one bite at a time,
at a time.
And, you know, I've used that trick personally, even as far as signing up for WordPress or, you know, finding a hosting provider. I've purposely done it after I put, okay, this is probably getting into too much detail, but like put a lasagna in the oven and you put a timer on that thing, you know, 45 minutes or whatever.
Yeah.
I'll sit down and be like, okay, I need to focus on this website and do this task. And I have 45 minutes and that's it. And then it doesn't feel like this monumental thing. It's just little thing that I did while the lasagna was cooking.
Yeah. And I love it.
It absolutely translates to signing up for an email provider or scheduling out some posts of your photography, you know, on social media, or even just sending out an email or three emails a day trying to get new prospects.
Yep. You hit it right on the head.
Yes. And, you know, since we're talking about social media and even getting the word out, how do we get the word out about how awesome we are? Of course, we all think we're awesome photographers. So how do we communicate that to other people?
Well, first, like I was saying before, figure out who those people are. Right. And then go where they are. So, you know, for example, are you building training materials that you want to market to other photographers? So where are other photographers congregating? These days, probably Google+, you know, and Facebook, in different communities on Facebook. So find out where they are and start interacting with them in there. And one of the, you know, back to that whole party analogy that I used earlier, you know, what you don't want to do in social media is be the person that shows up to the party with, you know, one of those dancing signs in front of the car wash, you know? You don't want to be that person that just says, hey, I'm here. Oh, by the way, did you know that there I'm giving 50% off my blah, 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 blah. You know, you don't want to be that on social media because you'll get unfollowed and ostracized and all that right off the bat. And a lot of photographers surprisingly make that mistake. They'll just say, okay, I'm on Twitter now. I'm just going to start promoting this thing, you know, and see where it goes. When the reality, social media is social. It's a conversation. And like that party, instead of that person that shows up with the dancing sign, you want to be the person that shows up, you know, you're silent for a while, you're just kind of looking around, getting the lay of the land, you know, kind of figuring out what the temperature of the conversations are, and then start interacting, you know, but not on a, you know, a selfish sort of basis, more altruistic. You want to go in there and start offering useful comments. You know, if you're a photographer and you're in a, let's say it's a landscape forum and you're a landscape photographer, you go in there or on Twitter or whatever, you go in there and you start talking about, hey, I just tried this new technique where I did this and this and this, and I found this cool article that explains it. You guys should check it out. Boom. Completely altruistic. It's not pointing back to your site at all. It's pointing somewhere else. And now you know, there's a little nuance, little electron of data that's saying that this person adds value to the conversation and they're not a barnacle on the conversation. So, but then over time, you know, as you move forward in, you know, your marketing efforts, then you can start interjecting offers in there, but they still have to be, what I say is they still have to be wrapped in bacon. Like if you want to feed a dog a pill, you wrap it in bacon. Mm-hmm. So same thing. You want to wrap your communications in bacon or in very delicious slices of bread. So, you know, you go in and you start with, hey, you know, say this is an email communication. You start with, hey, you know, I just want to let you know that A, B, and C are going on and had this cool thing happen. I thought you might find this interesting. That's the first slice. The meat is the offer. The meat, the offer might be something like, oh, over on my blog, I'm doing this thing where I'm giving all my readers 25% off. You know, you should definitely check that out if you have time. And then below that is the second piece of bread where it goes into, oh, one other thing, there is a cool video on YouTube, blah, blah, blah. So you're interspersing, you're putting the offer between useful content, other useful content, so that it appears less like an offer and more like part of the conversation. So, you know, that's a general, like a high level flow of interaction online, even with a sequence of like Twitter, you know, your messages, you can't do the sandwich metaphor with Twitter because there's only 140 characters, but you can, the sequence can be like that. So you can, you know, the flow or the beat might be give, 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 ask, give, 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 ask, you know. Instead of the reverse, it's like a bank. You don't withdraw, 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 deposit.
Right. I like
deposit,
that analogy.
Deposit, deposit, withdraw. Right. So same kind of metaphor.
Absolutely. And you know, it's people, like you said, with social media, it is a conversation. People know when they're being advertised to and they don't like it. And Frederick, I'm raising my hand right now, if you could see me, because I have been that person, that obnoxious person. In the past, you know, I'm a lot better now. But yeah, I've gone there and been like, hey, you know, Facebook, for example, buy this, having a special. And I mean, it's like crickets. Yeah. And I've noticed that when I'm posting other things of value, be it an interesting article, a how-to article, or even just other things for fun or other things that help people get to know me better. Mm-hmm. I mean, the response has just been amazing. Yeah. And then I noticed that certain times people will start asking for things. For example, I was posting paintings, digital paintings for fun. And I've mentioned this before in other episodes of the podcast, but just I was stressed, time of stress in my life. I just started posting stuff for the heck of it. And I didn't say a word about selling it or what it costs or whatever. I just said, hey, check this out. You know, this is a shot of a lake near where I live and it's peaceful and calm. And people started asking, where can we buy this? And I'm like, huh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the whole, in marketing, it's the whole know, like, and trust trifecta, right? Mm-hmm. So in order for people to feel comfortable with purchasing from you or becoming a customer or even a qualified lead, they have to first know you. So, and knowing you is like following you on Twitter, blah, blah, whatever. And then they can know you and not like you, and it ends there. So, so they have to know you and like you. I'm like, oh yeah, Shmira is a person that I wanna know more about. She's really interesting. She's like me in a lot of ways, you know? So now they know and like you, but they could still not trust you, and it ends there. Right. So the trust piece comes in, then you have to trust that you know what you're talking about. You're not a scammer, and you are somebody that's providing value to the, you know, the growth national product of the internet, right? Mm-hmm. So once you have those three, and those only come with time and effort and sort of altruistically giving stuff to your audience or to your proposed audience. So if over time you grow that know, like, and trust quotient, right? Then you can start that give, 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 ask, right? So during, you're doing the give, 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 ask to build up the know, like, trust. And then when the ask comes, it's much easier for them to say, you know what? You know, it's almost like the, in marketing, it's the law of reciprocity, they mm-hmm. call it. So when we as humans feel like if someone gives us something that, you know, most of us, not all of us, most of us feel like we want to give something back in return, you know, because somehow the universe is out of balance because they gave me something, I have to balance it. And a lot of people and organizations, you know, exploit this. You like, you know, different religious groups in airports that are soliciting donations, they'll give you a flower or a pamphlet or something like that, expecting, you know, and it seems altruistic on the front. They're like, hey, just let me give you this flower, you know, and, you know, you think you're going to take the flower and walk away. But after you take the flower and that transaction has completed, they ask you for a small donation, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. And they've done studies, people that take the flower, people that don't take the flower, and how many people donate. And it is heavily leans towards the people that have accepted that donation that actually give back far more in return. So that reciprocity piece is what you're doing online as well. So you're giving, essentially giving flowers to everybody before you go back to them to ask them for a donation, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then the people that took the flower or downloaded your free ebook or your video or subscribed to your podcast, whatever, those people feel like I've gotten immense value over time from this person and they're just asking me for $12. I can do that, whatever. You know, whereas if you came in cold with, hey, buy this, you have no idea who I am, but you have to have this. It's the best thing ever. You're just going to delete it, right? So right, that's the nuance of how social media and online marketing work right there. It's all about relationships. It's all about trust building and getting people around you to know you and, you know, understand how great you are, like your family and friends do, and then, you know, asking for the offer or asking for the sale.
Right. You know, it reminds me of the whole Pat Flynn model. Have you heard of Pat Flynn?
Well, yeah, I'm a big fan.
I guess you have to live under a rock if you haven't heard of that guy. But I really like how he first started out because all he did was provide value, mm-hmm. and he didn't ask for anything in return. And for the listeners who don't know about him, it started off when he was putting out a study guide for an architectural exam. And at the time, he just kind of created it for his own notes, but he made it online so that it'd be easy for him to access. And he didn't even realize that people started finding it and using it. And when he got wind of that, he started putting out more, and then he started Smart Passive Income. And mm-hmm. step by step, as he learned the whole passive income online area, he put out articles and he started a podcast just teaching people as he was learning. And I mean, he's got the most loyal following you will ever see because all he did was provide value. And he still provides a ton of value. It's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, even with Pat, no one can see. And Pat will say that he didn't know where this stuff was going to lead when he started. He just started moving in the right direction and taking action and baby steps and over and providing value. And people know, like, and trust him. Mm-hmm. And now look at him. You know, you look at his income reports and you're like, really? How can I just get a fraction of that? You
know? Right. I'll take 10%.
Yeah, I'll take 10% a month of your 400 grand or whatever you're making a month, you know, and it's crazy. I'll say, like, with This Week in Photo, when we started the show, like, what, 6 years or so ago, we had no idea that it would turn into a network or get to where it is today. We started it as a podcast because podcasting, you know, looked attainable. It looked like, oh, this is something we could do. Maybe we'll do a show on photography. We all like photography and we'll just talk about it and see if people like it. And then we started doing it over and over and over again, altruistically, just doing it and making it available for free, which it is still free. Mm-hmm. And people loved it, you know, and then they, over time, you know, like I was telling you before we started recording, we're at 380, as we record this, 381, 382 episodes in, and they're each over an hour long, right? So, you know, and there's hundreds of interviews that we've got in there too. Mm-hmm. But over time, people feel like they know, like me as the host, they feel like they know me, right? They feel like they know, like, and trust me. If I go to a photography trade show, like Photo Plus Expo coming up later this month, you know, I go there and typically I meet a bunch of people that have listened to or watched the show. And when they approach me as friends. They don't approach me as, hello, sir, I'm John Doe. I appreciate the show. They say, hey, Frederick. Hey, dude, what's going on?
Have we met?
Yeah, exactly. I feel like I know I'm getting older, but I don't know who you are. I'm sorry.
They know all about you. I'll bet
they know all about me. After 300 and some episodes, they should know what kind of toothpaste I use, right? So, it's all fun, though.
Absolutely. And, Frederick, you know, another thing that young photographers are running into is having that money conversation with potential clients, especially when they're first starting off. They don't completely understand their value. Do you have any tips on how we could more effectively have that conversation with potential clients?
Yeah, I do. Thanks for asking that, because I think that's a huge, huge problem amongst creative professionals, not just photographers. And that's that old starving artist thing where artists starve because they don't answer the question. They don't know how to ask for money for their work because to them it's invaluable. Right. And they look through the eyes of other people and like, yeah, no one will see the value in that, you know, and then they get caught up in that little vortex of self-worth or putting the value on their work. So, you know, one of the first things you can do to sort of break through that is, you know, it's an exercise in understanding that your work is valuable and it's a commodity. It's like, you know, it's like uranium because you're the only person that can create that thing that you're creating. Somebody else can go shoot Yosemite or the Golden Gate Bridge or, you know, the whatever, you know, but it's never going to be yours. Somebody else can create another podcast, a photography podcast. Many have, but they're never going to be like mine because I am the element of this podcast that is irreplaceable, right? Just like yours. Somebody can create another show just like this one. Copy yours down to the T. It will never be like yours. So people have to understand that intrinsic value that they provide. And then on the photographer side of it, you have to understand that and I use the word ignorance in the most flattering of ways here, because the public tends to be ignorant when it comes to valuing photography in general, because they look at it like, you know, especially on the wedding side of things, like why would I pay for why would I give you $400 for a 16 by 20 print when I can go to Walmart or Target or whatever and get one for $2 or $3? It's the same paper. Are you making yours on Jupiter or something? You know, why are you charging this? And the public tends to not take it. And then, it's getting worse these days because these pro-level cameras with 4K and all this stuff are coming down to the consumer level. So Bob and everybody has a camera that may be even more capable than the one you're using. So in the old days, it was like, oh, they're a professional photographer because they have a big old camera and it's expensive. So they must know what they're doing and they can charge for it because that camera is going to make better images than my camera. We're going to pay for it. That's not the case anymore. So the conversation needs to shift from commodity discussions. You know, your camera's a commodity because everybody can get one. Prints, generally speaking, are a commodity because most people can order prints from their iPhone or whatever if they want to. So all that stuff is a commodity. So the conversation comes to art. It's all about the art, and it's about the art and the artisanship that you bring to the conversation. So you have to shift it away from, hey, I'm going to sell you a print, to, hey, I'm selling my expertise that happens to manifest itself on some, you know, Epson paper or whatever. But what you're paying for is my artisanship. You're paying for my hammer and chisel on that piece of rock, not the piece of rock. Right. So, so changing the conversation to that with your clients is the first piece of it. And then pricing wise, you know, a lot of people have the, you know, and I myself as well, you have that block of, okay, how do I price myself? I'm sitting here and this is the exercise that most people go through today. Okay, I want to be a wedding photographer. Okay, so I am living in San Francisco. So let me search in San Francisco for wedding photographers. I'm going to make a list in a spreadsheet on Google Docs of all these like 100 wedding photographers. And then I'm going to take the aggregate of all the of what they're charging. And I'm going to come in lower than that. That way I'll steal all their business and I'm pricing myself right and blah, 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 blah. When I think that's the wrong way to go. You know, I think that seems like a logical way to approach a problem like this. You know, look at what other people are charging, then charge that or less, and you're in the money. But what you don't look at is that those other people are charging based on their competency and charging based on what they feel like they are worth, mm-hmm. right? Not what you are worth. So you don't want to charge people what I'm not going to charge people what I think you're worth. You need to charge people what you think you're worth. Mm-hmm. And I urge photographers to move into more of a, you know, rather than a commodity, okay, I'll shoot your wedding for $100 kind of metaphor, to more position yourself as high end. Even if you're not going to charge high end, position yourself as high end boutique. Your Tiffany's, your Tesla, your Mercedes-Benz of photography, all your stuff should scream high quality, expensive. And then even with expensive prices, but then give people value or make them feel like they're getting a deal by you saying, okay, my price is normally, I'm just pulling a number out of the air. My price is entry level package is normally $5,000. And this is what it says on my price sheet. But I'm running a special right now for people that wear Uggs. And and I'm gonna knock $2,500 off the price just for you. But don't tell anybody, you know. Mm-hmm. So, and then you do that. And then all your billing materials, your invoices, all that reflect that $5,000 with a negative, you know, $2,500 on there so that they feel like they're getting immense value. So they're getting you for a cheaper price. But then the realization is that you're really worth this $5,000 level, and all your marketing supports all that. So position yourself as a boutique and then drive to that, and only discount, you know, if you discount like that. And even with friends and family, like if friends and family come to you, which I'm sure you've had, you know, they say, hey, you know, can you do a portrait of my kid? You're a good photographer. You have a good camera.
It only takes 10 minutes.
Yeah, it only takes 10 minutes. You're really good. Can you just shoot this? It's hard. You know, I know it's hard, and you know, I'm generalizing. Not everyone will be able to pull it off, but I would suggest you treat everyone as clients, right? Mm-hmm. Even family, you know, you treat them nicely, you know, but say, yeah, I just have this process in place where, you know, so I can keep track of everything I'm doing. And I don't really do free stuff anymore, but for you, I'm going to discount it down to cost, mm-hmm. right? So my cost to shoot, you know, your kid and provide you an 8x10, 5x7, whatever, is about $30, $40. Normally I charge $400 for that, but if you just pay me cost, then, you know, it's all good. Invoice them mm-hmm. for that $400 and discount it down to that friends and family price, mm-hmm. right? So they understand that, oh, okay, yeah, they're the real deal. They're running a real business and they're not just giving their work away.
Right. I've started doing that specifically as a result of this podcast and talking to other photographers. Mm-hmm. You know, I've been in that situation. If my family is listening, oh, I love you, you know, but it can be a little bit tricky because it takes time, it takes money. They don't always realize that.
Yeah.
And so I think that's a great way to handle it.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you position it as, you know, hey, you know, I'm just learning how to get my business started. So I want to make sure I'm keeping all my ducks in a row and tracking everything. So I'm going to put you through this process just like I do everybody else. And, you know, it'll be easier for you too, because you'll get the proofing page and all this stuff. You can see where everything is. And then I would, you know, then add the cherry on top of it with, you know, thanks for letting me shoot this. I would love your feedback on the whole process and how this stuff went, you know. And then that's it.
And you know, I think psychologically, even with your example of the $5,000 wedding that you discount down, I mm-hmm. think psychologically it makes you up your game as a photographer,
yeah.
and provide them with even more value. And I've seen a correlation between higher prices in general and a higher quality photography and service, as mm-hmm. far as, you know, different photographers go. So that could be a really good thing. Here in Michigan, I see a lot of competing on prices, as far as, you know, like you were saying, oh, I'll shoot your wedding for $100, or I'll be the cheapest person. My personal opinion, you know, I could be wrong, you can call me out if you want, but I think it hurts the industry, the photography industry as a whole, if you're trying to be the cheapest out there.
It does. It does. We've done entire shows, several shows on, you know, the Uncle Bobs out there that we call them shoot and burn photographers. You know, it was shoot and burn. Now is, I guess, is shoot and share, because it was, you know, I'll shoot your wedding and give you a disc of the JPEGs and you go for it. Oh, you want the raw files too? That's the extra $100, you know, but mm-hmm. for $200, you're out of the door and my hands are washed. I don't have to build any albums, no proofing, nothing. I show up, I shoot it. I'll burn the disc in the car, give it to you, and I'm gone, you know, after the reception. And you're right. That hurts the industry because people look at that. And like we were, you know, going back to the commoditization conversation, people look at photography as a commodity and they say, well, if this guy will shoot it for $200 and you're saying you charge this much, I could get that disc and take it over to Walmart and print it and then go to Target and get an album and stick all the prints in there. And there's my wedding album for under $300, completely discounting the artisanship of the whole thing. But what I say to people is those photographers aren't going to go away, but it's fine. You know, they serve a segment of the market that wouldn't buy your services anyway. I mean, if they're buying that level of photography, then obviously that's what they want, right? So give them the benefit of the doubt, saying, okay, if they want a shoot and burn, then that's that market. You are not that market. You're not going after those people. So it doesn't matter if they're shooting them or not. That was never your market because you can't make a profit at it. Look at it from the standpoint of, you know, there's always going to be people running to McDonald's drive-through and buying that. Those aren't the people that want to go to a sit-down restaurant, hang out, have a nice glass of wine with their significant other and get that whole experience and then pay the $100 check at the end of the night rather than the $9.95 for the McNuggets, right? Mm-hmm, so you want the people that want the steak. You want the people that are shopping at Frederick's, not the people that are shopping at Fred's.
Right. And I've had people come to me and tell me that they wish they'd order the steak instead of the Happy Meal as far as photography goes. I mean, and you know, those are always painful stories. The clerk at the eyeglass store. She was telling me she had Uncle Bob. He was actually related to her, I think her uncle. And he shot her daughter's wedding, and it was not good at all. I think he didn't charge more than $200, and the photos were terrible. And it had actually happened years ago, and it was like it had happened yesterday, because she couldn't get that day back, you know what I mean? And she had these crappy photos, and that's all she had.
And that's it. Yeah. And, you know, these are life events. That's when you're having those conversations with the client. You know, again, we're gravitating this towards wedding. I guess that's the easiest one. But, you know, you're having a conversation with that client. And if you sense that they are moving towards the commoditization kind of conversation piece of it, like, why would I pay you this? One of the things that you could use the insurance kind of metaphor. You're not hiring a photographer for the images. You're hiring them not to screw up your wedding, right? you're not paying for an awesome album. You're paying to not have the stress of the Happy Meal, you know, and, you know, 20 years later when you want to show your daughter the wedding dress and the wonderful day that you had and all that stuff, that you're not like, well, you're not telling the horror story of the horrible photographer you had instead of showing awesome photos. So they're paying for that, not just the photos.
Right. And that's invaluable. Those memories.
Yeah, because they don't happen again. And that's photography, right? I mean, whether you're shooting a landscape, a model, macro, whatever, whatever you're shooting is never, ever going to be the same after you click the shutter. Mm-hmm. Right. Especially with people, you know, and I would argue, and the reason I like shooting models and women and that sort of thing, I would argue, especially on that side, because people change day to day and let alone year to year. And when you capture people in their prime, when they're looking their best and all that, and you lock that down, they have that forever. Right. So you've immortalized them at that point in time and you've captured that forever. If you hire somebody that doesn't know what they're doing, you might capture something you don't necessarily want to keep.
That's putting it nicely.
Yeah, I'm trying to be nice.
Awesome. Well, you know, next, tell us, what's the most common business mistake that you see young professional photographers make?
Yeah, I think the biggest mistake, and I know you've got this nailed, I was checking out your site, is not starting your email list, right? Mm-hmm. So, and Pat Flynn talks about this too. You know, we mentioned him, he made the mistake early on too. And it's the, you know, looking at social media, all these networks out there from Pinterest to Twitter to LO, that new one, to Facebook, all these people build up these massive followings on there. And, you know, they walk around chest puffed out like, yeah, I got this many followers, I'm good, you know, when in reality, what I call it is digital sharecropping. You know, you're tending someone else's land, and that person can kick you off that land anytime they want to, or change the rules or change the soil or whatever, they want to, because it's their land. The only way to kind of shift away from that, or one of the main ways to shift away from that sharecropping type metaphor relationship is to own the relationship with the customer or with your client or with your fan base. And you can own that relationship by driving people from those social networks to your stuff to get on your list. So, you know, a lot of people, you know, if I had a whiteboard, I'd draw on it. A lot of people, what they'll do is they'll have all these different social networks, you know, all these different circles on the whiteboard, and none of them are connected. And one of the circles of equal weight is their blog, right? So I can communicate with people through my blog, I can communicate through Twitter, I can use Facebook, et cetera, et cetera. But they're just bubbles on the whiteboard. What I suggest is moving that blog bubble to the middle and making the other bubbles smaller with arrows pointing into the blog bubble, right? And then on that blog bubble is flypaper, you know, and that's your email list. So that's your email list. So you drive people, the generally speaking, you should drive people to your blog, to your website, with hopes that they end up on your email list. Once they do that, now you own the relationship with that person and you can have conversations with them on that give, ask kind of flow, right? So now you can send out newsletters giving them stuff. You can go on Facebook and say, hey, I wrote this awesome blog post, or I did an interview with Frederick Van Johnson, blah, 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 whatever. He was horrible. You know, you have to check out how badly he crashed and burned. You know, go to my blog to find out, right? Then they click over, they go to your blog, and they see all this other cool stuff you have and signed up, and boom, you got them, right? No more digital sharecropping.
I like it. I like it. Well, Facebook, they can change, well, they have changed the rules multiple times.
Yeah. And you, the thing about Facebook is they change, the rules that they change that you see are the part of the iceberg that is above the waterline, right? That's the stuff that people have called them out on, that they've found and all this stuff. You have no idea what's going on below the waterline over there, and you probably won't find out for years. Like, Facebook has been doing A, B, and C, you know? In 2014, Facebook was matching your medical records to your email address.
Oh, boy.
And marketing to you based on your life expectancy. You know, you never know what they could be doing that.
I have not thought of that.
Yeah. Somebody from Facebook is listening. They're like, hey, I'm going to bring that up at the next meeting.
Oh, thanks, Frederick.
Yeah, sorry about that.
Oh, but it's so true. It's so true. You know, owning the information of your listeners. I mean, even if, for example, it's hard to imagine, but if Facebook disappeared off the face of the earth or kind of faded off into obscurity, if you did not have an email list, you'd have no way of getting in touch with those people.
Yeah.
Just be lost, gone.
Relationship broken. And businesses are built on that. Like This Week in Photo, especially the commerce piece of This Week in Photo, it, you know, we have a relatively large social media footprint, as do I just personally. And I use that a lot to reach out and drive people back to the blog post. But if I was to lose, for some reason, Google+, Facebook, Twitter went away tomorrow, the site would not suffer that badly, right? Because I have a strong email list that I can reach out to my listeners and say, or even through the podcast, because I own that as well. You know, I can reach out and say, hey, Google, Facebook, and Twitter went away. We're moving the party over to this new network. Go follow us over there. You know, I own that. If I did not have that email list and those networks went away, what am I going to do? I have to start from zero, from scratch, to start trying to build up that network again, which I may or may not want to do. So I may just say, you know what? I'm done. It's over.
So, crying to your
pillow. That was a good run. It's over.
Oh, man. Oh, well, next, tell us, what's one thing you wish you knew before you went professional with your photography?
Oh, yeah, man, that's a book of stuff. And I'm still learning. I mean, I think I'll be learning photography until, I don't think there's a such thing as a professional photographer. You know, we are practicing photographers, generally speaking. Some of us make more money than others, but no one, not even the oldest photographer out there, could tell you that they know everything about photography. So I think one of the biggest mistakes that I've made is just not learning more stuff earlier on, you know, and I'm a big nerd. I mean, I like learning stuff, and, you know, rather than watching like award shows on TV, I'll be watching Nova Science Now, you know. So, you're like, I'm a Neil deGrasse Tyson groupie. So I'm always like sucking in all this information. But earlier on, I wish I had learned more and got a deeper understanding of photography. I feel like I have a really deep understanding now, but when I was first getting started, you could put me behind a camera and I knew kind of fundamentally what was happening when I pressed the shutter, but not to the level that I understand the mechanics of light and exposure and all that stuff now. So I wish I had formed that up a little stronger as a photographer.
Interesting. And is there a particular photography resource, a tool, an online course, or anything that you would recommend to our listeners today?
Yeah, I mean, there's a ton. I mean, budget, you know, a lot of it depends on budget, right? But, you know, I think you can go a long way with very little or no money at all, you know, or just your internet connection. Mm-hmm. And YouTube, there are some amazing resources on YouTube. And maybe I'll send a list of links to you later that you can put in the post. But there's some, like one of the artists on there that I just watch just to be inspired. Sometimes I'll just put it on while I'm working on other stuff to watch these guys go at it, and it's like these artists that do compositing, like they'll take a blank Photoshop window and build an amazing piece of art over the span of like an hour and a half or something, real time.
Wow.
Telling you what they're doing while they're doing, rather than just like explaining, oh, this is the lasso tool, this is how it works. They actually go in and build art, you know, from scratch. And then some of them even give you the files that they used to build it so you could try it yourself. But, you know, that kind of learning, you could just sit there and kind of watch what they're doing. And they're going at real time. So they're not going really slow to show you this or whatever. They're like, okay, now I'm going to select this. I'm going to copy this. I'm going to duplicate this layer, move it over here, put a shadow on it, boom, 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 boom. And just by that speed kind of learning, by you looking over the shoulder of somebody that knows this stuff, you learn so much. And, you know, there's two places that I would direct people to that are like this. There are three. One, the artist's name is, I think his name is Andre Oprinka. If you just YouTube search for him, you'll find his channel. It's awesome. He's one of the ones that do those really long tutorials on different kinds of compositing effects. Then there's my friend Aaron Nace. He runs a site called Flern, Phlearn. Hmm. And it's amazing. He's in Chicago. They release a new tutorial on YouTube regularly, maybe even weekly. And the YouTube channel that they have, you could just spend 3 days in there just looking at photography and shoots and Photoshop manipulation and retouching, all that stuff. And it's all free. And then they have a paid component where if you want to take one of their courses, you can buy the digital course and you get all the files and presets and plugins and all this stuff to kind of recreate the shot. And then the third one is another friend of mine, Serge Ramilli, and he goes by Photo Serge, Photoserge. I think it's photosurge.com. Mm-hmm. And he's got thousands of tutorials on photography and Photoshop and Lightroom and all that stuff on his channel. And he also has the component of paid courses as well. Cool thing about Serge, last time I was in Paris, we sat down and had dinner. And Serge is the coolest guy. He's exactly like he appears in his videos in person. He's French, obviously, so he's got this cool French accent. So he's teaching you photography with a cool French accent, and you know all the mannerisms and all that stuff. It's the coolest thing in the world. You have to check it out.
I definitely will, for my own personal.
Yeah, you'll love all three of those. I'm telling you, I'm ruining your weekend right now.
See? I know. Oh my goodness! I'll put these in the show notes too for our listeners. Very great. Cool. And you know, our final question, but definitely one of our most important questions. Tell us where we can find you.
So my name is Frederick Van Johnson, and online you can find me if you just Google Frederick Van, FrederickVan, you'll find me on Facebook, Google Plus, Twitter, Pinterest, Flickr, all those. So if you want to find me and connect to me through social media, you can do that. Or you can just come to my site, which is at frederickvan.com, or check out our podcast at thisweekinphoto.com.
Excellent. Well, just thank you so much. You know, you've dropped a ton of gold nuggets all throughout this interview. This was awesome. We really appreciate it.
You're welcome. You're welcome. You know, I think you can tell by, you know, the way I talk about this stuff, I'm still insanely in love with photography. You know, we're still on the honeymoon and we're just getting started, right? You know, and these toys keep coming out, you know, and I loosely call them toys, but these tools of the craft keep coming out that reinvigorate my excitement for photography. Like just yesterday, Apple released their new 5K IMAX, you know, which are, they're saying, the ultimate display for photographers, right? Ooh. At $2,400. So, so I obviously have one of those coming. So I got that. It was time for me to upgrade. Trust me, this is not a whim thing. So I have one of those coming, and then the, you know, I'm a big fan of smaller cameras, like so these mirrorless cameras that do all this crazy stuff, and you know, it's just exciting all the things that we can do these days, and with, you know, you overlay on top of that the internet and how we can do marketing and sell stuff and be self-sustaining. I've been self-sustaining without a corporate job for 4 years now, almost 4 years, yeah, 3+ years without a corporate job, just doing what I do, and I've never been happier. So I would definitely suggest people that are thinking of going in this direction to do it, you know, break free, go do it, and enjoy your photography.
Definitely. It's worth it. And it's a lifelong process, for sure.
Yeah. Yep. Never stop learning. Never stop learning.
For sure. Well, thanks again, Frederick. This was awesome.
You're welcome. My pleasure.